Hello and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific. I'm Keith Parent. Coming up today, the Singaporean government announced plans to ease its mandatory death penalty in some drug and murder cases. Australia's territory, Christmas Island, is planning to take more asylum seekers. Also today, we have the first of a special series of interviews looking at business in Asia and how the economic woes in the West and stiff competition from China are having an impact. We have this and more on Focus Asia Pacific, putting the focus on the Asia Pacific. The Singaporean government has announced plans to ease its mandatory death penalty in some drug and murder cases, but says capital punishment will remain. The amendments are limited, but they are being viewed as a welcome breakthrough by both legal and civil fraternities. Kandahar Sapati has more.
This change will ensure that our sentencing framework properly balances the various objectives: justice to the victim, justice to society, justice to the accused, and mercy in appropriate cases.
Singapore's Law Minister K. Shanmugam announcing the proposed amendments to the mandatory death penalty law. The changes would give courts the discretion to apply a lesser punishment like life imprisonment and caning, but only to drug mules who cooperate with investigators and for those who are mentally impaired. Suppliers and distributors of illegal drugs will still face the death sentence. In criminal cases, if the accused can prove that there was no intent to kill, then the death penalty can be waived. Legally trained Siew Kam Hong, a former nominated Member of Parliament, says it's a significant step for Singapore, which has long upheld a zero-tolerance policy for drug trafficking. But he says it does not go far enough.
The mandatory death penalty is inconsistent with international human rights norms. That is to say, when you take away the judge's discretion on whether to impose a capital sentence or some other sentence, then that is fundamentally flawed when you look at it from a human rights perspective. So I think what everyone should be able to agree to is that even if we want to retain the death penalty for Singapore, we have to make it discretionary in all cases.
Currently, there are 35 prisoners awaiting execution, 28 for drug offences and 7 for murder. Under the proposed law, which is expected to be introduced by the end of the year, death row convicts can seek resentencing. But what are their chances for a reprieve? Ravi Philemon, a community worker and social activist, says it will depend on the extent of discretionary powers courts would have and the details of the law.
A lot of it will rest upon the judgment of the investigating officers and ultimately the Attorney General's office, which will decide to bring the kind of charges it does against that individual. So in that sense, you have to really look at the draft, what's coming out in that draft.
Law Minister K. Shanmugam has warned the legal fraternity not to make any assumptions or give misleading advice to the accused.
This is a matter of judgment, and the approach being taken is not without risks. But we believe this is a step we can take. We ask that those giving legal advice to the accused persons should carefully study the legislation when it is enacted and properly understand the precise scope of the changes.
The Singapore government has always maintained that the death penalty has helped to keep homicide and drug-related crimes low. But Siew Kam Hong says the government has given no conclusive evidence except assertions and historic trends to defend this argument.
There are other factors, right? It's just completely difficult getting a firearm in Singapore, for example. Drug enforcement activity has been stepped up as well. So, you know, it's a combination of factors. And the death penalty is not a silver bullet that solves everything. So just to point to the importance of the mandatory death penalty in keeping crime rates down in Singapore is an argument that's not impossible on the face of it, but it has to be supported by evidence, and we've not seen that evidence.
The proposed amendments do not represent a huge shift in Singapore's policy on capital punishment. But as Ravi Philemon explains, it's an acknowledgement by the government that its laws must represent the aspirations of a first world nation.
People who would want to come and invest in this country will look if the laws of Singapore is in keeping with the laws of the first world countries around the world. And it is to soften the stance for these investors to be a leader in the globalized world. that I think that this law has been revised so it will look more humane and more attractive to investors to come in and justify their investment.
Australia's Indian Ocean Territory of Christmas Island is preparing to take more asylum seekers after two more boats turned up heading towards the area. An Australian naval ship reached the boat believed to be carrying around 81 asylum seekers off Indonesia earlier this week after it put out a distress call. Earlier, seven people on board another boat were located. There seems to be no let-up in the frequency of voyages and no shortages of boats or crew for them. The men and boys who crew the boats are often lured by promises of big money, but they end up with nothing and often find themselves behind bars. One man, who is in his 40s and has a wife and two children, said he was lured into helping by promises of $300. He ended up getting nothing and spent more than a year and a half in an Australian jail. Greg Roberts reports.
Mr. X has bright eyes and a cheerful smile, but by telling this story, he fears the people who conned him may take revenge. So while our camera rolls, he seeks refuge behind a surgical face mask, sunglasses, and a cap pulled low.
One day, someone I know came to me. He offered me a job as a cook in a boat. He said we'd take some tourist fishing in an island. He promised to pay me 3 million rupiah. I agreed because I needed the money.
That's about 100 days' pay, enough to clear a family's debt, perhaps a chance to leave poverty. But on their first night aboard the boat, unexpected passengers started arriving by dinghy, about 100 asylum seekers bound for Christmas Island. Mr. X's lawyer, Lisa Hiarej, says he had no choice but to go through with it.
Mr. X told me that a lot of passengers want to kill him. Tell him, you have to go to these islands, these Christmas islands. And then Mr. X said, no, I want to go home. And they said, no, you have to go. So almost all the people there, the illegal people, want to kill them.
Things were made worse when another boat arrived to take the captain away, and two asylum seekers forced Mr. X to keep driving the boat.
The captain gave me direction through the compass and GPS. He said when you get to the island, the friends of the passengers will pick you up.
That turned out to be a lie, too.
Around 4 or 5 a.m., a group of fully armed Navy soldiers jumped onto the boat. I trembled and wet my pants because I was so scared that the guy who picked us up was the Navy, not the friends of passengers as expected.
Mr. X spent the next year and a half on Christmas Island in detention in Darwin and in prison in Sydney on people smuggling charges. He's got no complaints about Australian facilities, though.
When I was in Christmas Island, they treated me well. My health being checked, even they gave me an English course. That's how great Australia is. To Indonesian, the food in the prison is much better. It's not a prison, but like a hotel. Food is abundant. I even gained weight there.
But it was still a year and a half away from home.
I felt disappointed toward the Australian government because it took so long to process. Even my friends, the other Indonesian detainees, have to say they are guilty because they are stressed at being detained for a long time.
Hoirul Unam from Indonesia's Human Rights Working Group says Mr. X has served an 18-month sentence for a crime he didn't commit. The reflection of this case, he says, is that Australia needs to revise its policy and speed up the processing of boat crews. He and Mr. X's lawyer say it's a simple matter of sending people to meet the families to find out if they are who they say. After all, says Mr. Unam, poor boat crew don't go to sea with papers proving their innocence.
And you're listening to Focus Asia Pacific, coming to you from PCJ Radio. The four Asian tigers, which include South Korea, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Singapore, have become four of the most vibrant economies in Asia. But since the rise of this club, China has introduced fierce competition, And with the economic woes in Europe and the United States, there seems to be an uncertain future. In this, the first series of a four-part program, we're going to be looking at the four Asian tigers and finding out what they're doing to stay competitive. Our guest today is Larry Tsai of Joybian, a Taiwan company that develops products and applications for everyday use.
Yes, Joybian company, we started this company in year 2006. And at the time, we're trying to make this company so that we can bring computer technology to the consumer field.
What do you mean by bringing computer technology to the consumer field? Because people would say, well, people already have computers and, yes, and other gadgets.
Well, yeah, as you know, that Taiwan is have a lot of technologies involved with the computers. So we make a lot of computers, we design a lot of computers. So we know computer very well. However, on the consumer side, our Taiwanese companies so far have not really reached to the consumer market. So since we have the technology in computer field, and since the computer technology are transferring to everyday life, and especially for the consumer electronics, so I believe that we should have the advantage of bringing over the computer technology to the consumer field.
What kind of technologies in particular are you focused on?
Yes, we're focusing on the digital electronic technology and also the wireless Wi-Fi technology. This technology combined together can bring products like internet radio or PDAs, smartphones to everyday life.
What sort of applications are you talking? I mean, there's been a lot of things that are now already available on the market where if somebody wants to do their vacuuming, they can be at work, they hit a button on their computer, and all of a sudden the vacuum at home starts running, or they can turn their lights off. Is that the kind of applications that you're talking about with this new technology?
Yes, exactly. We're bringing the wireless technology along with digital technology to the everyday life, meaning that, just like you mentioned, you can have your PDA or smartphone to control your lights or to make sensors, like a security sensor at home, where you can check the status of your house when you're away or when you're in the office. So that's exactly what we are working on for the future.
Now, what about this? I mean, as you know, for many years, especially maybe 20 years ago, Taiwan was one of the Asian tigers, mm-hmm, with Singapore, mm-hmm, South Korea, mm-hmm, Thailand, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing a lot more competition from, let's say, areas, mm-hmm, like Vietnam, Cambodia, yes, Malaysia, mm-hmm, and especially China. Mm-hmm. How does Taiwan, for example, or a company like Joybian, mm-hmm, which is a small company, mm-hmm, compared, let's say, to some of the big companies, yes, in China, how do you stay competitive in this kind of environment?
Well, actually, we believe that Taiwan still have the advantage of having the key technology on hand, meaning from the design, engineering design point of view. And we also cooperate with companies in China or in Vietnam or elsewhere in Southeast Asia for the reason of manufacturing or the production, because they have a better, most cost-effective way to produce the products. But we do control our own technology here. And also, Taiwanese have been working all over the world for the last 20 years. So on marketing side, we know customer better. We have better communications with customer in the U.S. or in Europe or Japan. So we believe that we still have the advantage over them. And also, since we have experience working with the overseas customers for so long, we know better what they're looking for. We know what kind of product the market are looking for. And of course, we definitely need to work with our customer to get the exact request. Unlike companies in China or Southeast Asia, maybe they mainly focus on the production. Sometimes they will produce whatever they think is cheaper or maybe with less quality. But nowadays, the quality is getting much better now, of course. But that's definitely a help to us, because we are doing the design here in Taiwan, and we're doing the manufacturing in China and Vietnam and Southeast Asia countries.
And what about for trends? I mean, mm-hmm, have you personally, mm-hmm, and Joybian, have you seen trends, consumer trends? Mm-hmm. Where do you think that, mm-hmm, it is going?
Well, on the consumer side, as you know, that smartphones, like iPod, iPhones, or Android phones are getting much more popular. And nowadays, over like this year's CES, we see a lot of tablet PCs or like products like Apple iPads. They're everywhere. So I think the trend is that the digital technology products will be integrated to everyday life, not just on PDA, but also on TVs, or even on your refrigerators, or your microwave, or your washing machine. So they'll be part of everyday life in the future. And that's exactly what Joybean is going to do. But Joybean company is not going to make refrigerators, TVs, or washing machines. But we're going to integrate our technology into modularized product to place those modules into those consumer electronic products so that everybody can enjoy the benefits of having high technology.
Now, as you know, though, a lot of economists are saying that the world is in an economic crisis right now. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it for, let's say, for a company like Joybean, a small mm-hmm. company, to come up with these new technologies in the current economic crisis? And do you think this is having any effect on the business itself, or is that sector of the economy still going to move forward no matter what happens?
Yes, economy situation is not so good now, and as everybody know, and Joybean definitely is also suffering from the situation. However, Joybean is building what we call a platform. We build a platform of electronics of designs, where we can integrate our product into, like I mentioned, into consumer products or even computer electronic products, securities or everywhere we can apply. And since we're developing the technology and all the platform of our products, so we believe that we should have a position, you know, on the market. And of course, we're already working on with several customers, where we're working with them to integrate our products. Our product meaning may not be the finished product in a sense like TVs or refrigerators, but in a sense that it's a modularized, small modules to be placed within TV, to be placed within refrigerator or washing machines. So we're working with companies that's going to make the consumer electronics.
I was speaking there with Larry Tsai from Joybean. If you just tune in, you're listening to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio.
You can hear PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news, talk, and entertainment mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher from the App Store. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on the Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
A Catholic bishop who disappeared in China shortly after he was ordained now appears to be under house arrest. Bishop Tados Mara Ching was apparently snatched by Chinese authorities after defecting from the state-sanctioned Church of the Patriotic Association to be ordained as Auxiliary Bishop of Shanghai. This alternative Catholic Church in China is recognized by the Pope, but it is not by the Chinese government, and there has been a long-running dispute between Beijing and the Vatican. Chinese Catholics gathered for Bishop Ma's first Mass last Sunday, only to be told that he had disappeared. Richard Enwart speaks to Anthony Lam, secretary of the Holy Spirit Study Center.
Bishop Ma is now at the Shaishan Seminary. Shaishan is a little bit at the outskirts of Shanghai City, about some 20 or 30 kilometers away.
Does that mean that he is safe now?
key is safe. We are not really clear about the situation, but the personal security is not a big problem, but the freedom is a problem. Yeah, I think he is surrounded or quote unquote under the protection of the public security officials.
Do you know what happened during the period when he was reported as missing?
I think, first off, the authority would like to isolate him away from the people. They may disagree with or discontent with his speech, his Thanksgiving speech after his consecration. Also, it's sold as a kind of punishment, to the bishop, But it's really, really, really cruel for me. This kind of action is inhuman and very cruel, And the bishop should enjoy full freedom to speak and then to act what he believes.
But presumably by making his choice to defect to the Vatican-backed church, he must have realized that there may be consequences like this. He was taking a very bold step.
For me, it's very difficult to estimate or to speculate whether he expect this kind of result. But surely, I think he's very brave. He is not afraid of this kind of reaction.
But in terms of carrying out his duties, if I can put it that way, now that he's been ordained as an auxiliary bishop, I mean, how is he going to do that?
I'm not worried about the future. The bishop is under sort of house arrest. But someday, one day, they have to release him. If not in this 1 or 2 days or 1 or 2 weeks, anyway, they have to release him and then set him free to carry out his pastoral duty. And if the government would like to do anything abnormal or illegal, actually, it will arouse the protest of the whole Shanghai diocese. The bishop is fully supported by the believers, Shanghai.
At this stage, would you expect any form of protest from his followers?
In the last 2 days, Shanghai people start talking about this case, and people start praying for the bishop. It's the first thing they can do. And later on, I think they will have their own action.
Has there been any word on what's happened yet from the Vatican?
Even though they don't have any formal relationship, but the Holy See can voice out. Just like about 10 years ago in 2003, when Bishop Wei Jingyi was detained by the government, they extend a really strong protest against such action. And later on, Bishop Wei was completely free. He was set free by the government.
After he was set free, I mean, has he been able to carry out his pastoral duties in the way he would wish?
So far, Bishop Wei is still carrying out his responsibility as a bishop. He enjoys not full freedom, but he enjoys certain a good extent of freedom so far.
So bearing that in mind, why do you think that the authorities arrested the bishop in the first place?
I think they overreacted. Clearly, they should avoid this crisis. They create a crisis for themselves. The bishop just quit his membership from a non-government organization. Anybody can do that any time. Actually, I'm glad to see this thing happen, but even so, it is a minor thing. People can quit his membership if he find the association or organization not suitable for him or her. But now the government put it into a political issue and then catch the attention of over the world. That's the big problem to the church and also to themselves. So we have to wait and see what they do afterward.
When would you expect to see Bishop Ma in public again?
Personally, I hope as soon as possible. He should be, because they don't have any reason to detain him.
Bearing in mind what has happened in this case and the previous case that you talked about, I mean, what is life like for Chinese followers of the Catholic religion? Are they also monitored by the authorities?
The government said they protect so-called the religious freedom of everybody, provided they follow the government's regulations, the state regulations. But actually, the government, especially the local government, now in China, very clear is that the local government are completely ignore any human right, any government regulations, government laws. They are doing something extremely authoritative, because they have power, they have gun, they have police, so they do whatever they want. This is disappointing the whole world, not only the people in China. But it also caused problems to the central government. For me, I don't know, but I would expect that the central government would not like to see this happen. I mean the detention of Bishop Ma, because it caused a big problem to them.
That was Anthony Lam, the secretary of the Holy Spirit Studies Center, speaking with Richard Edward. And guess what? We've come to the end of the program. If you wish to let us know what you think or have any comments or suggestions, do send us an email. Our email address is pcj@pcjmedia.com. Once again, pcj@pcjmedia.com. You can also write us via our snail mail address. Address it to PCJ Radio, Attention, Focus Asia Pacific, 8th floor, number 47, Lane 31, Sanmin Road, Section 1, New Taipei City, Taiwan, 22070ROC. We look forward to hearing from you. Also, I want to mention, if you wish to listen to this program again or catch past editions, visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com/FAP. Once again, www.pcjmedia.com/FAP. Also, check us out on Facebook. Do a search for PCJ Media and PCJ Radio. Click on Join the Group, and that's all you need to do. And also, by the way, I should mention, if you are going to be on Facebook, keep abreast of what we're doing here and send us your story ideas there as well. Anyway, on behalf of the whole team, this is Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you in 7 days' time for another edition of Focus Asia Pacific. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5... This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 9955 kilohertz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kilohertz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet... This is PCJ Radio.